Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Happy, beautiful, wonderful, marvelous Friday to everybody. And we are going to get started by talking. Well, I know there's a lot of stuff going on, but we still need to keep track of what's going on in general with the economy. But we'll talk about some specific stuff as well. And we have Paul D. Shelton from Warwickshire on with us today. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, G. I am doing well today. How are you doing?
All right, you sound a little busy.
Yeah. I always, you know, moving a lot when you are a business owner and a fourth grade, first grade teacher and four-year-old
yes.
That spiked fevers last night. Yeah, it's never a dull moment.
Oh, gosh. Well, so where to begin? I didn't even approach you about anything in particular because I'm thinking, like, we're not going to get to a lot of stuff. But
I know.
What's top of mind for you today?
There is so many things that are going on the economic front, on the geopolitical front, of course. And it's just, I mean, you can just throw a dart up in the air and land on a hot topic because they're all over the place. But I guess we can start off, as we typically do, with our jobs report because that was released today. And unfortunately, it was not as rosy as we were hoping it would be. We typically do see some negativity in the jobs report when it's released in the first quarter, but typically not in January, because in January it's a reflection of all the activity that took place in December. And typically we see a lot of retail hiring for the holiday season in December, or at least stability in employment during that time frame. But this was not the case. We saw a reversal in December, and we actually lost 140,000 jobs in our economy in the month of December. So we were on the process, and we were on the way back towards recovery, which we noticed that it started to slow down around the August time frame with the number of new jobs that were being added to the economy. But now it looks like we've gotten to a point where we plateaued on the amount of new jobs that are going to be reinstated into the economy, and currently the 3 million people, approximately 3 million people that we have that are on temporary unemployment, looks like they may be maturing to permanently unemployed to join the ranks of those that are already on permanent unemployment. So this is not a very good thing. This is a very troubling time for our economy right now. So where we are is that the unemployment rate is still steady at 6.7%. The job losses did not affect that. It did not cause the rate to move up, I should say, with the amount of jobs that we lost. But we're moving in the wrong direction. And the job losses that we saw, of course, are in the leisure and hospitality sector. Job losses in private education actually partially offset were offset by some of the gains in professional and business services and retail trade and construction. So we're seeing a bit of a shift in our employment landscape across this country. Now, we do know that the lockdowns that are taking place in California and different places all across the country are, you know, really bleeding into this data, and that's really hurting. And that really provides a backdrop for the need for more economic stimulus, which it seems like Congress will be in a posture to move forward with at this time. So our economic picture is still kind of bifurcated, really. We have a stock market that is doing well, but we have an economic market that is sick, you know, no pun intended with the pandemic in place, but the economic market is ill at this moment. And we can see that in the jobless numbers, as well as, you know, some of the other data that's coming out surrounding, you know, retail sales and things of that nature.
So retail, hospitality, that's right here in Central Florida for the most part.
Yeah.
So how long do you foresee that, I guess you could say, drought of some sort maintaining? Is that going to be through 2021, or do you think that we'll come out of it before the end of the year?
I think that it's really going to be dependent upon the vaccine and dissemination of the vaccine. If we can get to a point where we have mass dissemination of the vaccine and we can have a network to where it's being disseminated in mass droves across this country and being accepted, you know, widely by the constituents in this country, then I think that would be the key and the catalyst to allow us to answer that question. There is so much unknown right now, particularly about the new variant coming from the UK that's showing up in the U.S. across different states. And if the Moderna vaccine or any of the other vaccines available are effective with the new variant, which early signs show that it possibly could be effective, but there's still a large unknown. And whenever there is unknown, I always say there is volatility. So as long as we are unable to have any, you know, validity or any clarity in those questions, we're going to continue to see volatility, and we're going to continue to see at least instability when it comes to the employment market. I mean, it's just hard for us to say we can open up theme parks at full capacity, movie theaters at full capacity, and stores and restaurants at full capacity when we're still dealing with the virus. I mean, we're at a point where we're finally, it's like a dog chasing his tail. We're finally catching the tail where it looks like we're almost there, but then we get days like yesterday or the last 2 days where we set new records for the total number of deaths in a day in the country from the virus. So each time we take a step forward, it seems like we're taking a two or three steps backwards. So it's really hard to say. I would love to see things turn around in the second quarter of this year, or even in the second half of this year in June. And I would be hopeful that things would, you know, start to reach some normalcy, but it's just hard to really forecast that. And from an economic standpoint, for many corporations, it's hard for them to make the decision to order more inventory to stock stores around the country, because they just do not know if people are going to be able to go to work in those locations, or if there will even be a demand for some of these, you know, essential or non-essential goods, I should say, or luxury goods that are out there, just based on the potential economic situation in this country.
And I have to tell you, in the position I'm in right now, I am so thrown because I don't know what to make of certain things. I got a part-time temporary call center job with for the holidays, and have just recently got an offer and accepted an offer to continue permanent or whatever part-time. And it's not, the retailer is not cheap. It's not a cheap retailer. And it is amazing to me that people are still spending this kind of crazy money and you know, and who's spending that kind of crazy money and spending money, I mean, overspending really for stuff like a measuring cup. Okay. So I'm like, you know, I'm going down to Walmart. I'm going to see if I can even, you know, maybe get it, get a discount somewhere, maybe go to Big Lots or whatever. So it is, why, where is that disparity coming from in terms of, you know, the people that are out of jobs and are trying to keep from getting evicted and all that type of stuff versus those people that just have some throwaway cash and get upset because their measuring cup isn't coming on time.
Yeah, and so what we're seeing is two different things are happening, and it's boiling down to the differences in the economic market and the stock market. So whenever the stock market is positive or roaring like it is now, we feel better about the economy. We have more consumer confidence in things that are going on around us. Even though we may not tangibly see a difference in our checking accounts on a weekly basis or any significant rise in the cash that we have, I should say, in like M2 money and savings and things of that nature, we feel more positive, and then we turn around and go spend because we see possibly our 401ks, our retirement accounts, and things of that nature looking up. So that's one thing that is going on. The other thing is that those that have are getting more, and those that did not have before are getting less, and they're losing. Mm-hmm. And the wealth gap is really widening in this country. We have many individuals that were struggling, you know, prior to 2020, this pandemic hit them, and it really hit them hard. A lot of people that may have been on the precipice of being one car battery or blown tire away from financial disaster in their home, this has really hit them hard, and potentially in a lot of situations have wiped them out. So you see that segment of our economy that is not spending because they're unable to. The other segment of the economy that are somewhat insulated, which no one is perfectly insulated, but that still have their jobs and their financial situation has not changed significantly as when it comes to the coronavirus. Those individuals still have the capacity and the confidence to continue spending on the traditional goods and services that they've been spending and purchasing all along. So it's a very weird position and place that we are in our economy right now. And then when you add all of the liquidity in the market from the economic stimulus payments from the CARES Act and from the most recent coronavirus bill that was released, that adds a whole nother layer of confidence in consumers and sends them out to spend when typically the confidence wouldn't be there based on the economic prospects of the economy. So, you know, that it's a weird thing that we're seeing that. One of the things that was shown in the data during the summer of last year is that many luxury brands stood strong during the face of the pandemic. So if you look at companies that were previously in trouble in 2019 and before, like Tiffany and Company, the jeweler, they sustained pretty well because people were still buying luxury jewelry, and primarily, you know, people in their Asian Pacific theater were still buying, and there was a lot of e-commerce that they were conducting as well. But then if you look at other retailers, like recently, as recent as this week, I was in the Florida Mall and walking around, and there are many, many store closures that have taken place in the mm-hmm. Florida Mall. And that was my first time going in there, I should say, in maybe 8 or 9 months. It's been a long time. And one retailer that I saw, Charlotte Russe, which, you know, I've purchased a lot of stuff out of there for my wife, shoes and different things. They had everything $15 and below, and it looked like it was on a fire sale. So it looks like a lot of stores in that nature, where they're not the premium brands or the high luxury brands, are really taking it on the chin because those consumers are not able to get out there and drive that economic activity.
We are going to take a quick break. We are here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwickshore This is G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. If you have a question for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944. This is G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment, and we will be right back. Okay, we're going to keep going. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us. I am here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. And the number, if you have a question for Paul, is 516-387-1944. So I want to ask you about closing the gap. Have there been times in the gap, well, I guess obviously because you said the gap is widening. When are these times when the gap is closer, you know, or narrower than it is wide?
That's a very good question. I would say, and that's something that I would need to go research, but I would say typically and historically from what I've seen, excuse me, is that the wealth gap has been highly correlated to the racial inequity in this country, unfortunately. So there has, going all the way back, if we can go back 50 years, to individuals being able to receive business loans, small business loans, being able to apply for and receive equivalent mortgage rates to buy property, to buy houses, and to buy things of that nature. That's really where it really started to diverge significantly. There are some things in place now to try to help equalize the situation, but it really is only barely moving the needle, I should say. Unfortunately, the cold hard facts are is that there is a significant difference between whites and African Americans in this country when it comes to wealth, and that gap is widening even more so based upon opportunity, based upon access to investments, access to education. I read an article that said in 2010, the average 40-year-old white woman had a net worth of roughly $40,000, where the average African-American woman, same age, had an average net worth of about $6,000. So that's a significant disparity there. And a lot of that is traced back to access and opportunity, access to, you know, funding, financing, access to investments, financial literacy, and things of that nature. So I can't literally, you know, I can't see a time as I look back through my economic lens and scope where, based on economic theories or based on anything that the U.S. Treasury or the Federal Reserve has done, I can't see anything that would have caused that gap to decrease because any majority of the measures that are done on those financial and economic basis do not deal directly with the racial aspects of it, which bleeds into the overall wealth gap itself. So I would say that it's something that has grown and it continues to grow, but I'll be more than happy to do some research on that and get back to you with a more solid answer.
Okay, and I have another homework assignment for you that I'm thinking about as we speak. Because I think next month when we do our show on the economy, I want to delve into the history of black wealth and when it was good and, you know, some of the, you know, bring to light some of the black millionaires and some of the black current black businesses, too, and how they survived. So I think that's kind of what I'd like to focus on next month after we get the update out of the way, so to speak.
Awesome.
Does that work for you?
Will do. That works for me, and I actually have some exciting stuff about that and stuff that's going on today in the black community. So I think that'll be good timing.
Okay, great. I'm going to dedicate a whole show to that next month. So first Friday of next month, y'all be ready. We're going to talk about black wealth. So in the meantime, let's talk about the turmoil that is not economic, but maybe having an impact on the economy and the change that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is it's really a sad time, and those events that transpired and that took place with the riots in Capitol Hill are, for me as an American, was embarrassing. Thinking about, you know, looking at America through the lens of the rest of the world, and it was kind of heartbreaking. One of the things I did, I called my father, who was a retired Air Force vet, and you know, I asked him, how does he feel, you know, how did he feel about it? And he was heartbroken, you know, and, he, and you know, his response is, it says, no matter, you know, what side of the fence you're on or your political party or affiliation, disrespecting the nation's capital and the integrity of our Constitution is a significant disrespect. And that's, you know, near treason, you know, and it's, in my eyesight, at least. So it's been very sad just to see these events, you know, play out the way that they have played out. And I do believe that they will have some potential, or they could have some potential economic harm going forward as well. There was, it was noted too, and as a side piece to that, that there were some stores locally that closed early that day for fear that more widespread contagion would break out all across the country. A lot of those stores were places like, you know, the Academy Sports, places that, you know, sell guns and weapons and things of that nature, closed early, you know. So when you think about that, that's an impact to the economy for those stores that are closing early. Even if it's just closing for 3 hours early a day, that's three less hours on a paycheck. That's three less hours where someone has an opportunity to make it to a store to buy a new pair of shoes, you know, for their child or whatever the case may be. So that does slow economic activity. And especially if you multiply that by 50 states across this country that may have to pursue measures of that nature. So I think that, you know, there was a direct impact on the economy in that respect. Additionally, It brings into question a lot of fear over the next, you know, 12 days until inauguration as to, you know, what will take place. Will there be more events that take place like this? Will the inauguration be a safe event in and of itself? Will there be, you know, any other, you know, forms of homegrown terrorism like this that takes place in our nation? And I think that it is the responsibility of President Trump to stand up and settle this down for all of Americans right now and for the world, because really this is putting not only the U.S. in danger, but it's causing a lot of harm globally around the world. But it's really putting a, you know, the American people in danger, and it's really hurtful and harmful to see these things that are taking place.
So, and speaking of, you were talking about stimulus money earlier, and you know, all the liquidity. My concern, because I think a lot of us are not, I mean, yes, it's desperate times and these are desperate measures, but I think a lot of people are looking at, are not looking at, we really don't have this money. and we have a debt that we owe to other, in some cases, other countries around the world. And I don't think this is helpful in terms of those circumstances. Can you talk about the repercussions of the stimulus and not, I mean, we know how it affects us all positively. I understand that. But what should be the ramifications that we might face?
So there is a debt clock called usdebtclock.org. And I don't know if you've ever visited that before, but if you log on to that, the homepage shows you several different organizations that are spending money by the second, and we are at $27 trillion in national debt right now. the economic stimulus as we add more money, more liquidity, free liquidity and money to individuals and businesses across this nation, whether it's needed or not needed. And I do believe that there is a need for the economic stimulus, but it does have the long-term negative ramifications to our economy and to our growth. And it's going to be played out potentially in a very, very intermediate to near-term future. We already know that Social Security is something that is not going to be around for the next 500 years. And it's very possible that the Social Security Trust, as been predicted, will be expiring somewhere around 2034. Well, adding economic stimulus and the money that we're using and increasing the national debt kind of expedites that a little bit. So you're thinking about a lot of people that have retired recently, or a lot of people that are living on Social Security, or that may be receiving disability income and things of that nature that are relying on the system, that potentially could start to crumble. And we can see cracks in that. Our U.S. debt is ballooning right now, which is not good. Mm-hmm. And our national debt compared to GDP right now is 130%. 130%. So we have, you know, significant more debt than gross domestic product, than sales that we're actually producing and that we're actually making as a nation to make money. So we're living off of credit, and this is not a good thing. And just to give some color to where we were historically, back in the 1960s, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Back in the 1960s.
Back in the 1960s, the debt to GDP level was just under 54%. So we were at a level where we were able to go out and produce cars, produce clothes, and sell them, and be able to pay for all our bills with the money that we were making itself. In the 1980s, that dropped down to 35%. So we were able to, you know, use all of the things that we did to generate income in this country to pay for 65% of our bills. Now we're at a point where we can't pay for our bills, essentially. We have to borrow to pay our bills. So we're robbing Peter and Jonah to pay Paul. And this is something that's not sustainable, and it won't be sustainable for the long term. And it's going to, unfortunately, it's going to play out. You know, we don't know exactly how it will play out, but the data shows that some of the social services that we receive now will start to disappear.
So basically, we are doing the thing that we, as a country, that we tell everybody as individuals not to do.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
I'm no big financial genius by any stretch. I can tell you how to spend money like nobody's business, but saving and trying to be a little more frugal, you know, I struggle with, but I'm trying to do better with. And so how do we justify that? And how can we pull the reins back? What do we need to do?
Well, in order to pay for spending, you have to have the income. You have to, you know, generate the income. If I wanted to go out and buy another house, I can't just say I'm going to go buy another house and just keep taking out more debt. I have to justify that with my income to be able to afford and be able to pay for it. So one way that we derive income is through taxes. I know everyone, you know, hates having higher taxes. As a business owner, I prefer to have lower taxes too. You know, that's beneficial for all of us, put more money in our pockets. But we have to raise taxes in order to start to scratch the surface on this national debt. I am of the camp of believers that, you know, what Biden is proposing as a tax raise will not paralyze the country. It will not paralyze the country at all, going from 21% to 28% on the corporate tax rate, I should say.
As a financial analyst, when I put on that analyst hat and I look at different companies prior to the tax rates going higher under Obama and look at them now as tax rates are lower, companies are making a lot more money, but not significantly more. Their margins are still roughly the same. It's not like a company has went from, you know, 10% profitability, now they're at 40% profitability. No, their profitability has stayed roughly the same in a percentile rank, and the dollar change has not been significant. So increasing taxes on organizations, it does not hurt them on the bottom line altogether. And one thing to note about increased tax rates, it gives them the ability, when it comes to their debt expense, to be able to defer a lot of that as they're writing off more of that debt on there from a financial management standpoint. So the way we pay for this and the way that we write the ship is we have to look at we have to go through the budget, look at a lot of programs that are in place, and see if all of them are needed. Look at the tax code. How can we generate more revenue for the tax code? How can we equalize some of the things that are in the tax code now? Is it really fair for certain industries, like private equity managers, hedge fund managers, that could make $150 million a year or, you know, $800 million a year? Is it really fair for them to pay a 15% tax rate when, you know, you have other people like nurses that may be making $75,000 a year, working their butts off, working overtime and on the front line fighting the virus, and they may be bumping up to, you know, 29% on their tax rate. So there are some things that have to really be evaluated in this country to help, you know, move that along and try to right the ship.
So we are going to take a break now. We're here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shores. This is Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. The number, if you have a question for Paul when we come back, is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us on this beautiful Friday. Getting chilly. For Florida, anyway. Anyway, we're here with Paul V. Shelton of Warwick Shore talking about the economy. And let me ask you about something that we talked about probably, not haven't really talked about it much in over a year because of the pandemic, and that is about tariffs. We talked for a little bit about tariffs on China and everything like that, and you were talking about ways to right the ship, ways to make money. And I know it causes a strain in terms of international relations. However, is that something that needs to be considered in order to get us back on track financially?
And you're referring to the implementation of more tariffs or the increase of tariffs that are in place to derive revenue for the economy?
Right, and or
yeah.
At least the enforcement of those that may not have been enforced before.
Correct. Yeah, I think that it's really a double-edged sword with tariffs. Tariffs do have they do have the ability to provide us with that near term and quick income as things are coming across our borders and as we're receiving those goods. The negative part about tariffs is that we're such a globalized society right now that at any given moment in time, and typically without too much ramp-up time needed or too many barriers to entry, any country around the world could create a substitute product for many of the goods and services, or I should say goods that are imported and received or exported from the U.S. So what that paints is a picture of kind of closing our borders and closing our economy. So as we increase tariffs, and if we do so on a massive scale across all the different trade partners that we have, we get into a point where, you know, our trade partners will do just like other consumers. You know, if something is too expensive, you know, at one store, then I'm going to go to another store and shop over there and shop where it's cheaper. And when you get to a point where you pretty much send your consumers away from you, you close your borders, and it's kind of like having a closed economy. And then there are some negative ramifications from having that closed economy within itself. It is a way that we can derive the income. And for those tariffs that are in place that have not been enforced and we have not, you know, called out our trading partners on, this could definitely be a time where we can raise our hand and remind them of what the tariff looks like and what the current agreement is. But then you run the risk, especially with the geopolitical climate in our country right now, you run the risk of showing your hand and really looking like you're unable to really, you know, carry your credit and carry your debt. And it kind of deduces the financial strength and the overall perceived strength of the United States. So it's a very, very tough and fine line when it comes to that situation. Additionally, one of the negative, you know, impacts of that could be squeezes on many of the local producers. For example, if you have someone that's producing widgets and wadgets and they're buying them from the U.S. now, if they stop buying them from the U.S., all these widgets and wadgets that this producer is making are going to be stored in inventory. And if it's a perishable good, that inventory can only last for so long, and then they'll have to start discarding it and throwing it out. That is something that was seen historically in Brazil with a lot of specifically with milk. The economy closed itself at one point in time. There was a strike, meaning the truckers went on strike across Brazil, and many of the farmers, because they couldn't get rid of the milk that they had, and they had cows that were producing more milk, they just had to take the product that they had and just pour it into the ground. And they lost money as a result of that. The overall economy lost as a result of that because there was a shortage. And prices spiked. And when those prices spiked, they pretty much act as a de facto tax against the citizens in that economy. So it is a good way to bring in that money, but it does have a sword on both ends of the spectrum.
Okay, so then I understand that, and that was kind of my thinking, but I wanted to ask the question. So then I need to go to this other scenario, and I was thinking about it when we were talking about the disparity between the incomes, between the races. So I need to ask this on a broader scale, too, in terms of, you know, our financial situation. Do we need to start doing more encouraging of purchasing within our own country? And in the case of, let's say, the races, especially with African Americans, do we need to start encouraging each other to purchase within our own neighborhoods or community?
I think that shopping local is, there's something that I've embraced personally. I prefer
shopping local, because, you know, I know my community, I know the people that live in my community, and I'm able to support them in a grander scale in that way. Sometimes it's not always the cheapest thing to do. And as a consumer, and a, you know, and as a financial advisor, you know, I look for the route that is most financially prudent to pursue. But we could be at a point in time where, if it's not just the mindset of shopping local, or the mindset of only buying local, we should really have the mindset of supporting local. And when you think about it that way, from just supporting local, it doesn't lock you into, I have to buy from this particular store, I have to buy from this particular local restaurant or local chain, but I'm going to support this local restaurant, local chain. And there's many ways you can support it. One, financially, by, you know, being a consumer. Two, by word of mouth, by advertising, by helping with so many different things in the community to do that. And the reason why I say support is so much better than just offering that financial gift is whenever prices do gyrate, whenever we do get to a point where we're starting to see inflation rise in this country, you could see a sudden shift away from those local producers to those international producers that are producing it for half the cost. That would have a significant adverse effect on those local local retailers, local producers, and things of that nature, and can really cause pockets of the country to be in kind of like dust bowls, like we saw in the 1920s before, you know, the Great Depression. So I am all for you know, shopping local. I love when people use a local financial advisor like me. But at the same time, I think we should, you know, not lock ourselves into the mentality of that we have to buy American, that we have to buy from this particular company, we have to buy from this particular automaker. But let's just support, you know, these automakers. Let's support, you know, companies that are friendly to the American economy.
Okay, so but I know we've kind of gotten off on tangents, you know, but I think that these are questions that needed to be asked. But like we talked about, there's so many other things going on. Anything that specifically that you want to address right now?
There's, you know, well, we can speak to the stock market for a little bit. Today is actually the first day in many where we're seeing a little red across the stock market, which is a surprise. Because it's had such, well, it's not really a surprise that we're seeing a little red. The market has, you know, risen so much over the last 2 weeks that it is time to see some red. But typically when you have a lackluster unemployment numbers like we've seen today, coming off the heels of such, you know, tumultuous geopolitical events in our nation's capital, we would see significantly more downturns. On the day where we saw rioting in Capitol Hill, the market was up nearly 1.5%. And that's something that you typically don't see. So my message to people, my message to investors when I talk to my clients is that we are still seeing a bifurcated economy right now. We're seeing an economic market and a stock market. And you have to be very, very careful and prudent in how you play both of those, because they're not the haven and they're not correlated to one another as of right now. So the stock market is doing something totally different than the economic market is doing. It's like having a marching band where one side of the field is playing one song and the other side is playing another song. So there's a lot of noise that is in the markets right now. You have to really be able to decipher that. So that would be one thing that I will point out to people, is to not get complacent and think that just because the stock market is going up, that life is good. We're at a point right now where the economy is not as strong as I would like it to be. The stock market is doing well, but the economy is not as strong as I would like it to be. I would like it to be stronger. I would like to see better employment numbers out there. So don't get complacent in where we see the stock market as of right now, because there could very well
be a point where we have that transition to the stock market and the economic market correlating again. And we will see them correlate again. It's just a matter of, will the stock market meet the economic market, or will the economic market meet the stock market?
I wanted to ask you right now, with all of the effort to create vaccines and other types of medical stuff, is this a good time to invest in biotech, or is it too late to jump on the biotech, you know, bandwagon?
Well, much of the biotech bandwagon has the value has been received already in biotech. There are ways to still play the sector, the biotech sector, and still ways to play the overall healthcare sector as we're moving forward. Many of these companies that have produced the vaccine, Moderna, and all the other major players out there, stock prices have went up significantly. I believe year over year, Moderna is up over 500%. So most of the returns for that is already priced in, but that does not mean there is potential for more growth in some of the other outlying areas or sectors of the economy when it comes specifically outside of biotech to some of those other healthcare names that could play a potential significant role in the dissemination of the vaccine. One of the things that I spoke about with another media outlet and spoke recently in another group about was setting up a distribution chain and how the economy and how our government would be prudent and set up a distribution chain using CVS, using Walgreens, some of the local grocery stores that have pharmacies and things of that nature to disseminate the vaccine. Now, if there has been some talks about that, and if that is taken on a widespread basis, you'll can see a lot of upside appreciation for some of those names like CVS, Walgreens, Boots Alliance, Tenet Healthcare, and those places out there that are going to really support that supply effort of supplying that vaccine. And I think that's where the richness of investing would be right now if you wanted to play that sector, is really driving down into how this vaccine is going to be disseminated, especially when you look on the news and you hear people that are in New York City and they're frustrated that they can't get the vaccine, so they're thinking maybe I should just fly to Florida and receive the vaccine in Florida and just come back home. So I think that could be a potential.
I've been hearing a lot about it.
Yeah, which is crazy, which is very crazy. So
there's so many forms of wrong.
Yeah, it is. But there still is more room for all of the biotech companies that are working on the vaccines, because they're, to a certain degree, are still going to capitalize on sales. There's more orders that are coming in. I believe the UK just ordered 300 million vaccinations from Moderna over the last 24 hours. So we're going to continue to see this. And we're going to, see it going forward. I would think a year from now, we're going to see it more so coming from the local level. It won't be coming from the federal governments around the world anymore, but it'll be coming from more of the Orlando Health is ordering X amount of vaccines. Advent Health is ordering X amount, or even, Publix Pharmacy is ordering this many vaccines to have them available to their network.
The other thing I wanted to ask about is in the wake of the amount of deaths that we've had, unfortunately, there is an area, I guess, that you have to look at in terms of monetizing that, and that is, I guess, looking at life insurance, I guess, looking at estate planning and those types of things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's very important, and that's something that I, speak with my clients with at the end of the year and wrap it around to the beginning of each year is estate planning. So with the number of deaths that we've had in the U.S. and worldwide, that really does affect estate planning. This is a time where really you want to if you haven't established one, establish a will, establish a trust, if that's something you need. I can always help with making that determination and help with fostering that. And really look at all your accounts that you have, even if it's your 401k, your life insurance policies, and make sure those beneficiary designations are up to date. Make sure those designations, the primary designation, is not for a minor child solely, because that creates another, you know, negative situation. I shouldn't say negative, but it creates another sticky situation when it comes to the state probate process. There has been a lot that has changed, you know, over this year. Insurance companies did not know essentially how to underwrite COVID-19, and they're still learning on the fly how to underwrite this and how to provide coverage. A good friend of mine is a underwriter for an insurance company, and sometimes he gets policies approved, and sometimes things they just won't go through as a result of the virus and certain areas that are known as hotspots. So that's a known issue. Insurance companies, you know, they can't survive if they bear all the risk of the healthcare crisis alone. So many insurance companies are banned.
Let me just ask you this. My parents believed in insurance. I mean, forever almost until, before my father passed. But my mother at one point decided she was not going to do the insurance company, the life insurance company anymore, that she was going to pay for funeral expenses in advance. And basically what she did, she set aside and she practically paid for her own funeral. The only thing that was really left was to take care of the repast after the funeral. But she kind of lined up everything ahead of time, which for me, and I'm an only child, I was greatly appreciative of. Like, okay, this works, you know, because it was, you know, you're already dealing with the emotional, you know, ramifications of having somebody pass, but just to try to figure out how to juggle the financial portion. And a lot of us, and I hate to say this, especially Black folks, a lot of us get caught off guard, even though we know it's coming. And things are either not set aside for, are not paid for, or we don't know where everything is. Like, we don't know who the life insurance policy is with. We don't know how much that person had in terms of life insurance, or don't know to get life insurance on someone that is a loved one. So I guess one of my questions is there a point where life insurance kind of becomes, I would say, maybe unnecessary or not as beneficial?
I would say that the way your mother planned is very good, and having that paid for and taken care of is a great positive that not many people, and far too less people, do. And you highlighted it perfectly. You know, whenever a loved one dies, that is a very emotional time, and it's often hard for many kids because they don't know where the life insurance papers are, the bank account papers, the mortgage papers, and then you're trying to find out everything all at once. So I am of a camp of believers that self-insuring is risky when you self-insure and you eliminate, you know, all life insurance. I've worked with individuals that are of the wealth class where they can afford to do that, but they approach it from an estate planning standpoint, where they have a trust that's designed to carry out, you know, their final wishes. So their funeral directive is part of that trust. Their transition of wealth is part of that. And everything is spelled out to the point where they may not need that, you know, $25,000 whole life policy just to help for a burial and a funeral service where everything else is taken care of. However, oftentimes, even if they are of the status where they can self-insure, it is still prudent to potentially have insurance to take care of a lot of ancillary needs, such as estate taxes. So if someone is uber wealthy, worth $25 million, and they're passing away, if their trust isn't set up appropriately, when the money doesn't flow appropriately and they don't have a living spouse or a wife or a husband where they can transfer to and get around the estate tax issue, then they're going to be up for a very sizable estate tax, more than likely 40%. So if you look at someone with $20 million and has to pay 40% of that in estate taxes, then for those other beneficiaries that are part of that trust, it really erodes and eats away at their estate plan. So at that point in time, it still is beneficial for them to have somewhat of an insurance policy that can help mitigate some of the cost of that estate tax and some of those other fees that could arise during that time frame.
Okay. Oh, so much to talk about, so much to think about. So basically, before we go, how do people get in contact with you if they need some additional information?
So you can reach Warwick Shore Advisors at 407-493-6288 at our corporate line. And you can follow us and subscribe to our media on YouTube and on Instagram and Facebook under Warwick Shore Advisors. And that's WARWICKSHORE Advisors.
Okay. And, of course, I've put information on the Jews Power Hour Facebook page. I've posted it. But so now what can we look at? What are the positives and negatives you see probably, I guess, in a minute for 2021? Where do you think we will, improve, and where do you think the problems are going to occur?
Well, I think the positives that we have going throughout the rest of this year is that we do have a vaccine that is in place, and we have multiple vaccines that are coming online. It's just a matter of getting everything disseminated out, so we are moving in the right direction. And I've said all along that we really won't see healing our health economically until we see health physically. So not until we're able to deal with the coronavirus head on, and we won't see true economic health and financial health like we've seen before the outbreak. So I think that is an extreme positive and on the forefront of positivity going forward. Overall, from an economic standpoint, the Federal Reserve is going to maintain very accommodative interest rates. Monetary policy is going to be very easy going forward throughout the rest of this year. So that should provide more of a backdrop for potentially the real estate market to do well. Those that have small businesses and those that are operating small businesses are able to receive another round of the EIDL loans, another round of the Paycheck Protection loans, which those loans are forgivable if 60% of the PPP loans are used for payroll. Those are forgivable. The other 40% can be used towards marketing or things of that nature. So those are some positive prospects, you know, going forth to this year. I believe we've seen a positive response, even though it's going to be a costly response. We've seen a positive response from the government, and hopefully, you know, we'll continue to move forward in the right direction with the vaccine and the health care of our country.
Paul Z. Shelton, thank you so very, very much. Really appreciate it, and I look forward to our conversation next on Black Wealth. So,
sounds
talk
good.
Talk to you later.
Happy New Year. Thank you so much.
Happy New Year. Take care. And thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good. Be well, be safe, be blessed. Spend some time inside this weekend because it might be a little chilly, so you can listen to some more G's Power Hour. You just have to look it up on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, G. Thanks for having us, and have a blessed day. And please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.